having our demonstrations of these two therapies. Beginning with mentalization-based therapy, I'm very grateful to have one of our role players, Andrea Gold, who is a clinical psychology student here at Yale, join us. And she is going to be playing the part of Alice, who is a composite based on individuals, based on many clinical scenarios. Alice is described, if you flip earlier in your book, from yesterday's sessions, there were various role plays. There's one session called 1C. It was listed as self-destructive behaviors. And if you look on a page after that, it says case examples, and there's Alice described. If you care to look, you don't have to, but it's in there in your book just for your reference. The role play we'll be doing, Alice is a 32-year-old, single, unemployed, Caucasian woman, and she comes to a session following a fight with her boyfriend and expressing suicidal ideation, including a specific plan that she is reluctant to share. And that's what she's coming in with, and we'll go for about 20 minutes, and then we're going to go, before we have discussion, we're going to switch, and we will have Alan come up and do some DBT demonstration, and then we'll have both of our experts comment a bit on how what they did illustrates their therapies, these two different orientations. Please go ahead as you're ready.
Can everyone hear me?
Yeah? Okay, good. Well, she'll be able to hear me. You know, you'll be able to hear me. Thank you. Okay, Alice, just as we start, I just want to take us back just a little bit to last week, because you remember we were talking about how your last therapist fired you?
Yes, and like you're going to do?
Well, that's what we were talking about. And I just want to know, has there been anything that you've worried about over the week that, you know, might have led you to think that I was about to fire you? Because remember, I asked you to attend to that in the session.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, what may have brought it on?
The same thing that happens every single time I get fired by a therapist. Mm-hmm.
But what I asked you to do is, maybe you can just do it in this session and let me know if there's any particular time at which you sense that I might be going to fire or you start worrying about that. Will you let me know?
The answer is yes, and I will let you know right now.
Oh, let me know right now. Okay. So what is it at the moment that might have done it, you know?
What happened between when I saw you last time and when I was seeing you this time?
I haven't followed that. You're going to have to clear that up for me.
Well, it's hard to talk about.
Something happened from last time to this time, did you say? Which is hard to talk about. Okay. What's so hard about it?
We talked about how I am scared of you firing me because just a few weeks ago my therapist left me because I tried to kill myself. And I think that if I tell you the truth, that you're going to do the same thing, even though you act like you're not.
Right. Okay. No, I mean, I can understand why you think that I might begin to fire you if you're suicidal. So does that, I mean, to me, that suggests there's something around about being suicidal at the moment? Yeah? Tell me a little bit what's been going on, though, that makes you worry about the suicidal.
When I spent time with John over the weekend, I had those thoughts.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, dear. What sort of thoughts did you have? Just tell me a little bit. I'm not going to fire you because you have the thoughts, okay? You know, we talked about that.
I know, but it's hard to trust that.
Sure. Okay.
When I was with him, we had been trying to take things slow. And we were together to watch a movie.
Yeah.
And I wanted him to hold me. Okay. And he wouldn't.
Don't go any further at the moment, Alice. What was your whole sense about that evening then at this particular point? You know, where were you in yourself at that point?
There's so much in my head. I don't know what you're asking.
I'm just asking what you were like at that particular point. you know, I mean, by the sound of it, it looked like to me you were looking forward to the evening.
I mean, yes, and I wanted him to hold me, mm-hmm. and I was also terrified that he wouldn't, and he didn't.
Okay. Okay, so take me a little back. I want to know what it was like before you saw your boyfriend, before you saw John, because you arranged to meet him. Yeah?
Yes. Okay. Well, we had broken up.
Yeah, I know.
What happened.
Right.
That's when I cut myself before the hospitalization. It was after we broke up. Mm-hmm. Since then, we've been talking and agreeing to really take things slow.
Mm-hmm.
So we were going to watch this movie together. And it was just unbearable to be next to him.
Hang on a minute, that's great. You'd worked something out there. So you'd worked
something.
You're trying to work something out.
Well,
that's
him.
Good, isn't it? Yeah. So you tried to work something out, and you were going to have a nice evening together. Was that the sort of sense of it?
Afternoon, yeah.
Afternoon, okay. Sorry. Tell me what it was like when you first appeared. What were you like? What were you expecting? What was your whole sense of this afternoon?
I was excited to see him, but I was also scared that he would reject me.
What made you so scared he might reject you at this point?
Because he broke up with me 3 weeks ago because I'm too much to handle.
Right.
And we're both trying to take things slowly, just like I'm mm-hmm. trying to give you a chance in this relationship, but it's the same.
Well, hang on a minute, hang on. Are you going to farm me then here if we go back to that?
I'm talking about I'm terrified of you both leaving me.
Right.
Just like people have.
Yeah. But if we just take John, this sounds like John was sort of going to have a slow afternoon with you.
Right.
Take it slowly.
Right, we were trying to do it right.
Yeah, so what's going on for him? Do you have a sense of what was going on for him at this particular point?
I mean, I think I experienced him as being cold.
Mm.
He told me, when I asked, why aren't you holding me? He said, I want to take things slow like we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't believe him.
Well, what did he mean by that, though, he wants to, as we talked about?
I don't know.
Have a go? I mean, what was he meaning, taking it slow?
Well, before we got into this pattern where we spent every day together, every night together, I was so jealous of him spending time with his friends that I, tried to control him and not let him do that, which wasn't working. He dumped me.
No.
But then we talked about it, and we're trying to give it a chance in a more, balanced way.
Right. So what was your sense of that being balanced?
What do you mean?
How did that... What was the imbalance in that?
What before? We were doing everything together, and I couldn't tolerate... We'd try to separate, and I'd call him, and we'd be together.
Okay.
Spending every night together, every day. You know, if he had to go to work, all I could do is think about when we would be together again. Mm.
So what was it like for you, feeling you were spending all the time with him?
Well, I just couldn't stop thinking about wanting to spend more time with him.
Sorry, when you weren't with him, you wanted to spend more time with him?
Yes.
Right. And what was he up to? Sorry. He was working at these times, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he said now he wants to be able to go to work and not feel guilty, and he wants to be able to spend time with friends without me, and he says it doesn't mean that he doesn't love me, and I... Well,
hang on. You go so fast for me. I want you to keep slow.
Well, it feels really
fast. Yeah, no, I know.
I've got a headache.
I know. I just want you to slow down a little bit, because it's too fast for me to keep up.
Okay.
What's upsetting you at the moment?
This is so painful, and I've got a really bad headache.
Mm-hmm. Are you okay with keeping on with talking about this? Even with the headache?
Yes.
Okay. So can we just go back to you?
I'm concerned that I don't think I really told you the details of how much time I wanted to be with him before, and we're just meeting, and I don't want you to just label me like that.
Label you like what? How am I labeling you?
That's all I can do. I mean, that's what other people think about me, that that's just how I am and that's how I'll be.
So how do they see you then? What do they see you as?
like just so needy.
Needy?
I have to spend every minute with the other person and know what he's doing. And okay. I mean, I feel that way about my roommate sometimes as well.
Are they right?
Yes.
Right. But is that a problem for you?
It's a problem for them, and it's a problem for our relationship, so yeah.
Yeah. So it's a problem for you, and it's a problem in the relationship, and that's a problem with John. Yeah? Okay, so let's just go back to John, because it was when you were seeing him that that led you to start feeling suicidal again.
Yes.
So let's just go back to that. Okay. So you're taking it slow. Am I right? You were trying to take it slowly?
That was the plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And he was doing it without a problem. It was so easy for him. It wasn't for me.
So what did you make of his sense that he just didn't want to give you a cuddle at this
point?
He
may not feel the same love for me that I feel for him.
Yeah. No, I can see that actually that's a bit of a problem. So how was he reacting for you?
He's just sitting there saying, I want to try to watch the movie. And he could do it, and he was so cool and cold even.
Cold to you?
Yeah.
Oh. I mean, how do you manage that sort of sense when he was cold? What happened at that point?
I felt pretty fucking hopeless. Like, we're trying this. He can do it. I can't.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm trying to...
What do you think you couldn't do at this point?
What?
What do you think you couldn't do at this point?
My mind just went to cutting myself.
Really? Straight away there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it just felt so painful to sit next to him. Okay. And not have him hold me the way I needed him to.
And when you're talking about it now, does that feel just as painful as you talk about it again? So you have a sense of wanting to cut yourself at the moment?
No, because I'm actually thinking about what that feels like instead of wanting to just run away from it.
Okay, well, that's good. So what's the difference between that and then? What's the difference now as you feel it?
I don't know.
But how come it's a bit different at the moment?
I don't feel as overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any sense of why not?
Because you keep trying to slow things down.
I keep pressing you, I suppose, don't I?
I keep, like pressing pause and then letting it play. Yeah. With him, it just goes...
starts running.
It goes so fast. Yeah, the pain is so strong.
Yeah. So what is it about what we're doing at the moment that allows it to pause a little bit? I mean, now I'm always trying to get you to slow down, because you do tend to rush.
Well, the cutting, so what is the cutting allows me to press stop.
Yeah. But your sense of the moment is that you don't feel like cutting. You're saying that's not around. And that's something to do with us slowing things up and actually trying to keep things on pause a little bit.
Yes.
So what is it about what I'm doing or what you're doing, what we're doing now? Is there something about it?
I don't know. That night, I thought about pressing stop, killing myself and ending it, so I didn't have to feel those feelings, because they were unbearable.
Okay, so at that point, you jumped all the way to actually thinking of killing yourself.
Right, and I didn't.
Look, I'm really glad you've told me that. No, I'm glad you didn't as well, but I'm really glad you've told me that. Because actually, that's the very sort of thing you need to be able to tell me. But I know at that point you're just going to start worrying I'm going to fire you. Oh, dear. Can you manage?
Yeah.
Is it all right? You okay? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's why you've got the headache.
When you laugh...
Well, it does, doesn't it? Sort of.
I don't know. But as other, you ask what helps, and we can just laugh and take a step back.
Yeah.
It helps me. So when I was with John, I grabbed one of my cats and just pet her, and that's what I focused on, and that's how I got through without cutting myself then.
Are you saying I'm a bit like a cat?
No.
Oh. Because which is something that we do that sort of soothes it, isn't it?
Well, you're doing it with me with talking, and I did it with my cat with feeling.
Okay.
But I can't always do that, and when it gets to be too much...
Yeah.
Like when the emotion storm turns into a hurricane.
Yeah, it starts running, doesn't it?
I can't be with the cats because I could hurt them.
You're getting a bit like a hurricane now, and you're kind of rolling.
And you're going to try to slow it down.
Yeah, I'm going to try and slow it down. So what about you slowing it down?
I don't know how.
Yeah. I mean, I'm slowing it down simply.
It's so hard.
You know, because it is really difficult. No, I agree it is. Slowing things down is really difficult, particularly when you want something like a cuddle. What's wrong with wanting a cuddle?
Because we agreed that we would take things slow.
So what does he mean by slow, do you know? What's his sense?
One step at a time, he says, and so we could be apart and together.
I didn't follow that.
So he could have his own life and have his life with me. Because when we were together before, he felt like...
Well, that's interesting. Hang on a minute. Don't rush. You're rushing off again. What's the problem with this whole sense? I'm not quite getting where your difficulty is in a sense. Hang on a minute.
Is this really painful?
Yeah. Can you stick with me a minute? Can you just stick with me this sense? He wants his own life, but he wants also to have a life with you as well. He wants both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to me, that sounds kind of reasonable. Do you want... Yeah. Hang on. Because do you want your life too, along with having a life with him?
When I think about him having a life without me, I think that's why would he want his life with me?
How do those match? I don't.
Because I can't do what he wants to give him space when he wants it. I feel like he's not with me, it's too hard.
Yeah, hang on, can you to just let you just calm down just a minute? Just wait a moment, yeah?
It's still going to be there.
Absolutely, but that's exactly what we're trying to work out. And you know that it can feel a bit better as far as I can tell.
What?
You say, if we slow it down, if we pause, if we stand back a little bit. Okay. Can you dry your eyes and just rest for a minute?
I feel more anxious.
Do you?
Yes.
All right. What is it that's making you anxious just at the minute?
That I'm going to have to, when we look back at the pain, I'm going to have to look at it.
No, I wasn't trying to look at the pain so much. I was trying to look at this whole sense that he wants a life of his own, but he wants a life with you. And my understanding is that you want a life of your own. Is that not right? And a life with him. But something goes wrong here. And then you jump immediately to this whole sense of you might as well die. You get this whole sense of wanting to harm yourself comes into your mind.
Because I can't tolerate it and it's not going to get better.
Ooh, wow. What makes you say it's not going to get better?
This is my whole life.
What makes you say it's not going to get better? I'm really intrigued by that.
I'm really interested in giving you a chance, and I promised my roommate that I would.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not convinced yet that it's going to make anything any better. And
no.
I still
why would you? Hang on. Why would you be convinced yet? We've only met 3 times. I mean, that's quite right. I quite agree with that.
Okay, I can agree with you.
But that's not quite the same as this whole sense that it's never going to get better.
What? Can you say that again?
That's not the same as it's never going to get better.
It's just so much pain right now.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know about facing that pain if that's going to help.
Okay.
I'm not confident that's going to help.
No, but the bit I'm trying to get you to just face a little bit, can you bear with me a bit, is between you and John. So when he doesn't react in some way that you really, really need him to. That's
your
sense. Yeah. When he doesn't, what actually does that do to you at that moment?
I feel completely rejected by him.
All right. And what does that mean? Just tell me what that means.
What do you mean?
Well, I don't know what it means for you to feel rejected. What is it? What happens in you? I know you jump to wanting to self-harm, but what happens in you?
Then he won't stay with me. I really love him.
Right, so you then think, oh, that means he won't stay with me.
Or he won't give me another chance.
Mm-hmm. Hang on a moment. So him not giving you a cuddle means he's not going to stay with you.
You're minimizing it.
I'm not minimizing it at all.
Yes, you are. You said
no, no,
I think
you
not giving me a cuddle.
No, you need him to give you a cuddle. But that means something like whether he wants to stay with you or not. if he does or doesn't, is that?
Well, yeah.
Yeah? That's tough, isn't it? So your whole sense was that he didn't want you at that point and didn't want ever to be with you. Yeah. But you see, now I'm beginning to understand how desperate it can get.
Yeah, it's desperate.
Yeah.
I feel desperate. Okay. And that's... I'm better off going in the bathroom and closing the door and going in the shower and mm-hmm. closing the shower curtain and putting on the water. And
the bit that I really react to there is the bit where you're better off doing that. I think you're better off pausing like we've done, and you're better off actually stepping back from it.
I can do that sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is great. So can we just step back for the moment, because we haven't got long left in the session, I think. And I really don't want to end the session with you feeling... we haven't got anywhere with this, and I don't quite know what we're doing. But also this other main thing, in talking about this, have you got a sense that you're going to believe and think, has he fired me, another therapist
you?
Fired me? Is that around?
I don't know. What
do you mean you don't know? I told you to attend to whether that was going to happen or not.
Right, and I can't tell if you're judging me for getting so worked up over the fact that John wouldn't hold me when I wanted him to.
What would tell you whether I was or not? What would you have to know or see?
Well, you're staying calm, and I'm not.
Yeah. No, but you're going okay. You're going up and down, and you are managing to pause. You're doing okay.
Well, what do I do during the week when you don't say pause? And sometimes I can grab my cats and hold them, but that's if I'm too worked up, I will not touch them because I could hurt them. I've got to be alone, and when I'm alone, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So how are you going to, if we could just a few minutes left, how are you going to slow things down? Because you've already said that's the thing.
That's what he needs to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but how do people slow things down? I mean, how do you reckon John keeps things slowed down?
I mean, he told me he wanted to hold me too. Mm-hmm. I didn't believe him, but he said he's thinking about, like, the long run for us.
Right. Now, you know, you just slowed down yourself there somehow. How did you do that?
Because I want this headache to go away.
Yeah? Well, great. Yeah. I wanted to go down and go away.
Well, I thought about your question. Like, I really thought about it.
Mm-hmm. So maybe that's something you can do to slow things down. Just really, really think about it. But I was quite interested, could we just finish in this sense now about whether there's anything around that you're going to be left with where I might fight? Because we've talked about all those things. You've terrified again.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, go on.
I ended up cutting myself that night.
Did you?
And I didn't tell you that.
Right.
I wanted to, but you kept pausing us on the earlier
things. I did, yeah.
So... we're going to need to talk about that, I know. And I'm left now a week knowing, well, when you actually know that I did cut myself, are you going to think, oh, no, she's just going to...
No, I'm going to think you're quite right. Everything got out of control. That's what you're trying to tell me.
I got out of control?
No, everything in you got out of control. Your emotions did. You didn't know what to do. Yeah. Hang on. Let's pause again. So we're going to talk about how that led to cutting again next time.
You won't fire me before we meet?
Before we meet next time, I'm not going to fire you that I'm aware of, no.
Well, what if something changes that you're not aware?
Like what? What sort of things? Look, there's nothing you've done that I'm aware of that's going to make me fire you. I just, you know, we're going to carry on working, that's the point. But I do want you to attend to that very important point for the next few weeks as we meet.
It helps when you ask what helps. Just a little thing, mm-hmm. When you say silly British things, it helps.
You can get away with a lot with a British accent.
So, I'll be at our meeting, and I'll remember that you said you're not planning on firing.
Yep, absolutely. And
in
the meanwhile, you're
not planning on firing you.
Okay, because that was the other question we had, wasn't it? So in the meanwhile, you're going to be focusing on slowing down things in your mind.
I'll use my cat.
Okay. All right, great. See you next week.
Thank you, Dr. Bateman and Andrea.
What I'm going to suggest is that I trade mics with you and let you speak for a few minutes rather than go right into the role play. Let's give Andrea a few minutes. Thank you. You're right? You good? All right. I think Andrea said she's good. We are going to go. Andrea's going to jot something down for a minute. You got to put pen right there.
Right. Isn't it make me fill one out?
Okay. Thank you. So what we're going to do is go into the next role play, and then following that, we're going to invite Dr. Bateman back up, and he and Dr. Frizzetti will discuss a bit of what occurred during the two role plays. Okay, they're preparing a moment before we start.
Yeah, just to orient... of course, in dialectical behavior therapy, we have a treatment target hierarchy. There's a set of targets that we've collaboratively agreed upon already. We would have done that in the first couple of sessions. And out of that collaborative endeavor would have created a self-monitoring diary card where the different things that we're working on are on a piece of paper that... are we calling you Andrea or are we calling you Alice?
Alice.
That Alice would be ideally paying attention to every day. She's practicing, noticing a variety of things. In this particular case, given her targets that are in the vignette, she's paying attention every day to rating, does she have suicidal thoughts? Does she have suicidal urges? Does she actually self-harm? Is she restricting her eating? How many hours of sleep is she getting? What is the quality of her relationships every day? And she's doing this every day, ideally. The other thing we put on this is a little thing that patients fill out just before they come into session. And that varies from patient to patient, what it might be. But for someone with her particular targets, there'd just be a little box there. It would say her urges right now, right at this moment, coming into session, her urges to kill herself or to self-harm, her urges to restrict eating, because that's one of her targets. If she were a substance user, it would be urges to use substances. Always urges to quit therapy, okay? And then for somebody who's as affiliative as she is, we'd also have something like, how connected does she feel to me? Okay, and she'd rate that at the very beginning of the session, usually like in the waiting room before she comes in, and we'd have her rated again just before leaving the session. Okay, and that would give us something that, if there are big changes in the wrong direction, that would give us something to pick up on the following week. So, but let's assume that there's, yeah, let's assume that we left the last session. Now, the thing is that with a third session, I think I'd like to make this maybe like a fifth session or a sixth
Fine.
Session, if that's
Fine.
Okay. Because the first three or four sessions in DBT are this orienting and establishing collaborative enterprise, a commitment to treatment, and establishing what the targets are. So I'd rather assume that we've actually already done that, we're actually in the treatment now. Okay. And so the diary card gives us, of course, a picture of what's been going on for the whole week and allows us then to organize the session, structure the session within the hierarchy. So if there's something that's life-threatening in DBT, we would prioritize that. Doesn't mean that's the only thing that we would do in the session, but we would start with that. If there's nothing life-threatening going on this past week or currently this moment, then we could look at treatment-interfering behaviors. And then if there's nothing going on there, we then look within quality of life, things like eating disordered behavior and problems in her relationship with her boyfriend and a variety of other things, drug use or, you know, whatever it might be, housing problems, problems at school or work, whatever it might be. Okay. Good enough? Well, how things are going in your relationships with friends and, yeah, 10 is, yeah, you can do it from like minus 10 to positive 10 or however you want. And diary cards, of course, are developed idiosyncratically, you know, so Alice would have a different diary card than somebody else, and even this month, Alice's diary card is going to look different in 6 months from now as things change. Her diary card will reflect some of those changes as our shift in focus continues over time. So, Perfect. Thank you. Okay, so actually, why don't you hold on to this? You just come in and give it to me, because that's what you'd actually do. So, come on. Hi, Alice.
Hi.
Are you okay? Oh, you look terrible.
Thanks.
Well, okay, look, can I say that differently? I think I stepped on your toe. You look like you feel terrible.
I do.
Is that better? Yeah, okay.
That was really mean.
Oh, sorry. Did that come out as mean? That's what I say to my wife. She doesn't take it the same way. No, I meant actually just that you look like you feel terrible. I was a little too abrupt there, wasn't I? All right, let's take a look at what's going on. Oh, my goodness, look what's going on here. Oh, what a week you've had. Wow. So you hurt yourself last week on Friday. Okay, right? Are you having trouble even focusing right now? Yeah.
Look,
yeah.
Look at your urges to quit therapy.
Yeah, there we are. You want...
You.
I want to? Okay. Okay, look at me. Come on. Come on, kiddo. Where'd you get that? Okay, your suicidal urges are high. Your urges to use drugs are high. Your misery is a 9 out of 10. And somehow you think I want to quit therapy.
Not somehow. It's because I cut myself on Friday, like
yeah.
You said.
Yeah. Okay, look at me. Look at my reaction. I'll do a little replay. Okay. Watch my face.
You said, oh boy, this is
something.
Oh,
looks like a terrible week for you.
You look terrible.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let that one go.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, watch my face when I notice that you cut yourself on Friday. Okay, watch my face. You've got to watch my face because you've got a different idea in your head about me than
yeah,
is actually
based on history.
Whose history?
My history.
Okay, that's why
I know.
Right, but you don't. We don't have so much history.
No,
so,
we don't.
So you got to pay.
Started.
All right, so I want to point out what you're doing right now is you are paying attention to what's in your head,
in
not
my
what's not
history.
What's right here. No, what's right here. Well, that your history. You brought it with you, right?
Because it happened.
Yeah, but it's not happening. What if it's not happening right now? What if it's not? Could you be open to that?
Being open to the chance of it not happening means that I'm opening myself to the chance of it happening.
No, you've already decided it's happened. Sounds like you've already got plenty of suffering as though that happened.
Yeah, I got a shitload of suffering.
So can you just be open to the other possibility? Try it. Look at me. Seriously. Come on. Am I growing tumors or something? What's the story here? Okay. I'm looking. I say, oh my gosh, you had a terrible week. You know, you're suicidal. Well, you got to keep looking. I know it's hard. You got to look at me because you're worried about me firing you.
Know how terrible I am.
How terrible? You mean you're judging yourself right now?
No, you're judging how terrible I am. You're
okay.
Find that out. And just
I gotta
like
say,
all of the other
this
therapists.
This is hard. You're making me hot. Okay, look, here's the thing. Here's what I don't want to do.
What?
Okay, I don't want you to get stuck on something that's not valid in the present moment.
Do you think having 5 therapists in a row fire you isn't valid?
That's valid, but this one's not yet firing you.
That's what they said to me.
Yeah, I know. And what happened? Okay, so tell me. Maybe we didn't explore this enough. I thought we talked about this quite a bit a couple weeks ago.
Which one?
Well, the most recent one. But remember we talked about this, right? We went over each one of these, okay? Each one.
Okay.
And we talked about our plan for how to handle those situations.
Well, it's hard to remember. You talk so much.
I do. That is true. But we made some arrangements. We made kind of some deals about how we were going to handle these situations.
I didn't call you for coaching because I knew I was going to cut myself.
Hang on. But that you don't get fired for not calling for coaching. You don't get fired for that.
Well, I didn't do what we agreed on.
Yeah, but I never... I was very clear with you that you don't get fired for having the problems that bring you into therapy.
Yeah, well, that's what my last therapist said, too. So you guys read the same book.
Maybe. Okay. Look, but here's what I'm trying to get at. Right? You're kind of stuck on that right now, and that's keeping us from working on what's actually going on in your life.
That is true. I'll okay? give you that. Yeah.
So if you're, I guess I would say if you give me 30 seconds of your actual attention, we might move past that.
Okay, I can do that.
All right.
I can give you 30 seconds.
That's all I'm asking for right now.
I can do that.
Oh, okay. So 30 seconds. I'm not firing you.
Will you write it down?
Yeah, sure.
Right now?
Yeah, in fact, I'll even send you an email. Want me to text you?
No, I want you to write it down on my diary
okay.
card, please.
Yeah, sure. Oh, I just threw away my pen. My pen was hot, too.
You dropped it on the floor.
I dropped it on the floor. Oh. Okay. I'm not going to write it on this one because I'm going to keep this one. I'm going to write it on your next one, okay?
Please.
Do you want me to sign it? Okay. I won't fire you.
Will you write Dear Alice? I'm serious.
I did.
Thank you.
Can I just write Alan?
No.
Alan E. Frizzetti seems a little formal.
Doctor
Frizzetti. Doctor. Oi. Okay. Dr. Alan E. Frizzetti, the whole thing. Can you read that?
Yeah.
Okay. You're the only one who can. But then, that's good. All right. Will that help? I think that's fantastic, actually, if that'll help. Now, does that make a difference?
Yeah, because I can hold on to
it. Yeah, but I mean, right this moment, does that make a difference? That's pretty good. Okay. So you really got stuck on this, huh?
Do you
get it.
Me?
I blame you for what? For having this horrible set of experiences that makes you worried about this? No. That completely makes sense to me why you would be so scared of this. Completely makes sense. But what I want, your job in this, okay? I've got a job in this and you've got a job in this, okay?
Okay.
Look over here.
It hurts.
I know, but look over here even though it hurts.
Me too.
Yeah. You notice when you look over here, you're feeling really ashamed right now, right? But if you look at me, the shame will go down. You got to keep looking at me though, because you've got to look at me and see that I'm actually not being critical of you. I'm not sure I 100% understand, but I think I got 95% of it. And if I don't, you'll tell me. Okay.
I can do that.
Okay.
I can. Do
but
that.
I want you to notice if you just look at me and look at my reaction to my reaction, not the other five therapists, you'll have a different experience.
Okay.
And your shame will go down right here. Okay?
We'll see.
Okay. Now, what I want to do is I want to record the rest of our session now. Remember we talked about this? I just forgot to turn it on. Because I want you to be able to listen to this later. Okay? Because I think that you're so upset right now that some of this is just not going to remember. Right? It's going to be hard to remember.
Yes.
Understandably.
Yes.
That's what happens to everybody.
Yes.
Okay?
Well, that's
and I want you to be able to hear me say, Alice, I like you. I'm not firing you. You haven't done anything that I would fire you for.
Cutting myself?
I want you to be mindful of what we talked about that. You know. Do you get fired for cutting yourself?
I have before.
In this therapy, from me, do you get fired for cutting yourself?
No, and if I kill myself, then I'm firing you.
That's right. And that's not fair. I promised I would not kill myself for the year. You got to promise you won't kill yourself for the year. Okay, good deal then. We're even.
But I can't control my thoughts.
No.
They happen.
Okay. Well, let's work on that. So right now, look at you. You've got pretty high urges right now. They're not all the way to 10. You're at 6, right?
Yeah.
So the question is this. Are you going to... Is there any chance at a 6... we just don't know each other that well, that you will bolt out of the session and go kill yourself? Because if that's the situation, then I'm going to get really anxious and go sit in front of the door. No, I'm going to go sit in front of the door.
No.
Okay, good. Because I don't like being anxious about you leaving in the middle of a conversation.
Yeah, and if you did that to me, I'd be pissed off.
Yeah, if I got up and left in the middle of the conversation, yeah.
Well, I'm going to pay you.
I wouldn't expect you to. Okay. So it looks to me, based on this, that you did cut yourself on Friday, but you're kind of like on a suicide chain right now. Well, if your urges to kill yourself are that high right now, is this the most suicidal you've been in the last week right now?
No.
Okay, so that was worse. Okay, so then let's go back and talk about that.
I cut
because you were feeling suicidal.
And I'm not going to kill myself.
Okay, great. Well, let's go back and talk about what happened on Friday then. Okay?
Yes.
Let's figure it out. And by the way, how is group? You know, you started group. It's only been 2 weeks now. How's it going?
I'm trying to give it a chance. I'm giving it a chance.
Okay, what skill did you learn this week? Do you remember?
Alternate rebellion.
Excellent. Yeah, I like the smile. That means you've got alternate rebellion, okay? Are you wearing boxers today?
No.
No? Okay.
If I tell you the skill I used for alternate rebellion, it would really mean a lot to me that you don't use it as an example again.
I don't use it? In other words, I don't push you to do it again?
No, to other people, because it's my example.
Oh. You got a deal.
I haven't told other people, because I think they'll judge me.
Deal.
On Thursday, after group, we learned the skill. I got in a fight with John, and I wanted to start yelling at him, but instead I walked away and got in the shower and did something that would really piss him off.
Yeah?
I peed in the shower.
You peed in the shower?
he hates
that, yeah. And you didn't, no Lysol afterwards, yeah.
And I didn't clean it, and he fucking ate.
But he doesn't know.
It's not going to hurt him. And
no,
it's not. It didn't hurt me.
Right.
It made me laugh.
That's good. Are you sure I can't use this example? It's a really funny. Okay. All right.
I'm embarrassed to tell people.
No, I think.
You're
I think.
You're the first person I told. I'm not going to tell the group, so please.
No, I promise I wouldn't without your permission. I won't. No, I think it's such a great example, though, actually. I think it shows that you really get the skill. That's fantastic. Okay. Any questions about. Group, any questions? I don't think you have any questions about alternative, but I think you got that one.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes the group leaders just go on and on.
Yeah, they're like me that way.
Yeah. But I think we'll see how it goes.
Okay, great. Okay, fantastic. Well, let's talk about what happened Friday. What time did you cut yourself, burn yourself? What did you do on Friday?
I cut myself at night.
What time?
Well, Susie had a shift starting at 11, so that means she left the house at 10.
Uh-huh.
So it's probably like 10.
Okay.
At night.
Okay, and it looks to me, if I'm understanding your diary card, and you got to help me with this because we're just getting to know each other on the diary card, okay? It looks to me like you had been restricting your eating, so you're probably hungry, right? That you'd been drinking.
I don't feel hungry. I feel sick.
I believe that. When you restrict long enough, your body just says, feed me, Seymour. I mean, it gets very upset.
No, it doesn't. I don't feel hungry. I just feel, like, sick and, like, I can't eat anything.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know what happens, right? I mean, you know, then you feel your system is just all messed up. Okay. So when was the last time you ate, by the way?
I had coffee for breakfast.
Food.
I had dinner last night.
Okay, so you're getting some food. Okay. So it looks to me like, you weren't drinking on Friday. Sorry, it was Thursday you were drinking. So you were drinking Thursday and not getting much sleep at all, 4 to 5 hours of sleep on Thursday night, restricting your eating. So there's lots of reasons why Friday would have been a lousy day. Okay. And then what happened? What happened then?
I told you how John and I are trying this new thing where we take things slowly.
Yeah,
and
right.
Where he came over for an afternoon movie. This was his idea.
Okay.
And we...
How are you feeling at that point? You're vulnerable, right?
What do you mean?
Well, not eating, not much sleeping, drinking the night before leaves you vulnerable to getting dysregulated, right? Kind of makes us, everybody more sensitive and more reactive,
yes.
Right? Okay. Yeah. But you're kind of happy that he was coming over in the afternoon? Did that feel good, or was that not so good?
I was looking forward to it all day, and I was excited, but I was also really scared.
Okay.
And I was scared of exactly what did happen.
Okay, hang on. So you're kind of prepped for something bad to happen.
I had to protect myself.
Were you... Yeah, you know, when you say that, it makes just my ears start to go... You know? Because your idea of protecting yourself, I have to say, is a little funny.
You're judging it.
No, I'm talking, it's like ineffective. It's kind of like driving on the wrong side of the street.
Well, how does that protect you?
That's my point.
Well,
That's okay. That's good.
Call me.
Well, I think sometimes, you know, protecting yourself is a good idea, okay? But being stuck in kind of, how many calories of energy did you put into worrying and thinking and analyzing how you're going to protect yourself before he even came over to watch the movie?
More than I consume that day.
More than you consume that day, exactly. And do you think that made you more vulnerable to getting dysregulated and harder to just enjoy whatever there was? Or
you clearly think so.
Yeah, I do. Well, don't you think so? I could be, but I'm also open to being wrong.
I know you said that before.
Yeah, okay. And so, like, being in the moment, right, just like we started out the session where you were pretty sure I was going to fire you, and that really made it hard to just notice that you're here, sitting here with somebody who actually likes you. This thought of firing you hadn't crossed my mind, right? You kind of miss that, right? And so if you're kind of churning over and over how John's going to fuck it up, right?
It's not that he's going to fuck it up, it's that I am.
Okay. All right, so tell me what actually happened. So you came over for the movie, and what happened?
Well, before when we watched movies, he would always hold me. He's trying to take things slowly with me to see if we can get on a track.
Mm-hmm.
Where
you said you have kind of mixed feelings about that. That's hard.
My reasonable mind gets it.
Okay. And it's hard in your emotion. It's hard on your wise mind, right? Because you're an affiliative person, right? Relationships are important. You like to be close to people. Right, you like emotional closeness,
him.
Right?
I really love him.
Yeah, and you love him, right? So slow means pain for the part that's not there, and it means satisfaction for the parts that's there. But right, you think you're the only affiliative person in the world? Right. But right now, you're more affiliative than he is, right? I don't know if that will change, but right now,
he
you're more affiliative.
Get scared. Like I do about me leaving, I get scared of him just having enough.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So what happened? He's coming over. Were you thinking about harming yourself when he was coming over? Had that crossed your mind yet?
No.
Okay. What happened?
I tried to get him to hold me, and I asked him to hold me, and he said, "No, I want to watch the movie just next to you."
Mm-hmm. So you're longing for some closeness, some kind of physical affection, right? Is that reasonable?
I just wanted to disappear in him.
Okay.
I just wanted him to hold me and
you wanted to
wrap
me
up.
And can you relax when that happens? Can you feel more peaceful when you're close to him? Okay. So it kind of makes sense that you'd want that, doesn't it? You're longing for that? Kind of makes sense?
Yes. And when he wouldn't give it to me, I just thought
so what did
he's
he do?
Never going to.
What did he do? Exactly, precisely, what did he do?
He looked at me and he said, "I want to hold you. You know I want to hold you. I need us to take this slow, and I'm going to focus on the movie, and I'm right next to you."
Okay.
And that wasn't enough for me.
No. Do you see how, I don't mean this in a bad way about John, but do you see how that was kind of invalidating?
No, he told me what he's told me before, that he wants, like he cares about us and giving this a shot the right way.
Right, but there's a certain implication, I could be mistaken about this, but it sounds like there's a little implication in what he said that you shouldn't want it.
How?
Like because he said he wanted to go slow, that you shouldn't be disappointed in that. You should be satisfied with that because he said it.
Because we need to.
Well, I don't know whether you need to or not, but that's what he wants, and you would like something different. And that means that every time, right, every time you want a little more than he wants, you're going to be disappointed. And I really want you to notice how reasonable that is, how completely sensible it would be. Every time we don't get what we want, we're disappointed.
It hurts.
It hurts, right. Okay, but it didn't just hurt this time, right? Where'd you go with it? What happened next?
I lost it.
You lost
inside.
It.
Inside.
Uh-huh.
And
it was an overwhelming hurt, like kind of like a black hole hurt.
Yeah, it was a black hole. But I'm so committed. I am so committed.
You're really trying so hard to go along with what he wants
work.
To do. Yeah, right.
And to not killing myself.
Right.
But that's... When you have a black hole of emotion in front of you, and all you can do is sink into it, I just want it to be over.
Right. No, so on the one hand, you want to sink into this luxurious lap of closeness.
Right,
and you got
then
the,
I don't
and
feel
got the
black
cold
hole, the
black
moment.
Hole instead that sink into. That's a pretty big contrast. That's a pretty big contrast. It's awful. Right.
That's why it's annoying.
Okay.
On
That's
Friday.
Why it's annoying. I get that completely.
But I didn't act on it.
No, hang on. But what I don't get, here's what I don't get. But it's not that I can't get it, you just have to hold me. I don't get how you went from feeling so alone and despondent and empty, having all this longing that's not fulfilled, how you went from there to wanting to harming yourself. I don't get how you went from there.
I can't remember if you used this word or my last therapist, but this is a time when I feel really desperate.
Desperate, yeah, okay. Desperate, but you're desperate for closeness, not for death.
I did something good there. I grabbed one of my cats.
Okay.
At first when I grabbed it, I want to be held, so I...
So, right, right from the frying pan into the fire.
Well,
great, even the cat doesn't want to
No,
be held,
but I have two cats. Okay. So I grabbed the other one, and she wanted to be held, and I just pet her, and I just
And what happened to... So your arousal was about how high? Black hole sounds to me like a 10 plus out of 10, right? Okay. And somehow you had the wherewithal to get the cat. That's really pretty good, right?
Well, she got my attention, actually, because she was meowing for food.
Okay. And then what happened? Pay attention now. What happened to your arousal then when you got the cat?
I held her and...
Have you thought about harming yourself yet?
And this is when I was thinking about killing myself.
Killing yourself. Okay. All right.
I wasn't thinking about harming myself.
Was the longing that big, or did you actually start judging yourself like you shouldn't feel this way and it's your own fault? And that's...
I felt like... I want it, and I'm never going to have it, and I don't deserve it.
Hopelessness. Okay. I don't deserve... Well, that sounds like maybe just a tiny, little, tiny bit
judgmental. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, now what if you had... What do you think you could have done differently right there?
I grabbed my cat.
That's great. But with the judgment piece. Remember, we talked about mindfulness. You've had a little mindfulness in group now. What could you have done differently with that I don't deserve it part?
You're pushing me, and I think that's a good thing.
That's good, because that's what I'm best at.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't feel so annoying right now, but I'm having trouble answering it.
Okay.
So you can...
No, that's okay. Sure, of course. I mean, I guess, is it okay if I gave you an idea?
I'm asking you to.
I think if you just notice that saying I don't deserve it is a judgment, just knowing it's a judgment might allow you to let go of it a little bit.
It's a judgment.
It is a judgment, right? Because we're kind of committed here to leaving the judgments behind whenever we can. In the bonus here, like the major bonus rocket ship out of the black hole might have been, how about this? It makes sense that I feel like shit right now because I'm not getting what I want.
I don't know about that one, but I can practice the judgment one.
Okay, well, that's a good start. But maybe you couldn't, but what if you could have said that? Would that be worth us practicing so that a month from now you could do that? Would that make a difference?
My head's getting kind of cloudy right now.
Yeah, this is a lot. This is a lot. All right, let's just start with the judgment one. Do you think you could do that?
Thank you, yeah.
Okay. What do you think we could do this week to help you practice the judgment part?
I don't know, but maybe we could think of a way with my cats.
Okay. Let's have the cats after you notice the judgment. Okay, so let's try this. How many times a day are you willing to practice this? You're willing to practice once in the morning, once in the afternoon, once in the evening? Two. Okay. Morning, afternoon, or evening? Which ones? Or it doesn't matter. You just do it at least twice.
Morning and... evening.
Okay. How about if you just practice? Can you set your... Do you have a smartphone or...
Yeah.
Something like that. Can you set it?
Yeah,
so
you
that
can do all kinds of alarms. Yeah.
Can you set it to any time that you want to go off two times a day? And then when it goes off, you just kind of notice what judgment you might have been having lately. We'll look especially for the I don't deserve something part.
So you mean not when I'm having a black hole or with
Let's
John
practice
or
in an easier situation first.
But when the alarm goes off.
Well, it's like you learn to ride a bicycle on flat ground, not going down a hill.
Well, that sounds reasonable to me, yeah.
Okay. I mean, obviously, if you're in the black
hole.
Oops,
the alarm just went off.
Excellent. But obviously, if you are in the black hole and you can get yourself to remember this, that would be fantastic.
I'll set it for 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. each day.
Okay.
I could put a message on it.
Great.
But I don't know what to put.
Notice the judgment.
Okay.
And go play with the cat. Okay? How's that sound? All right, now, we're just about out of time. I wonder if you could just run through and we could fill out these things for right now. Okay, so your urges to kill yourself right now, what are they?
3.
Okay, that's good. That's lower. Urges to use drugs?
Like a 3 also.
That went down. That's good.
Well, I didn't put my urges to quit therapy. I put you on it.
Yeah, I know.
At 10.
What are my urges to fire you? Good for you. You got it. You got it. Perfect. So what are they?
What number is this for you?
0.
We write that.
0 chance. Well, no, I can't say it. 0.00001 because I could get hit by a truck or something. That's not firing you. That's quitting. That's different.
Well, your intention isn't to get hit by a truck.
Intention is 0, yeah.
So yours is 0 and mine... In terms of wanting to quit, I see it's like a 1, but then in terms of not wanting you to fire me is a 7. So
yeah,
I'll make that a 4.5. Total.
Excellent. Perfect. Great. Okay. And how miserable are you feeling right now?
5.
All right, that's down. That's great. And what about just feeling connected to me, like I'm getting it?
The highest it's been so far.
Well, great.
7.
Okay, perfect. Great. All right. If you get stuck with any of this stuff, call me, send me an email, okay? And I'll remind you.
I'm going to add to my phone, notice judgment, mm-hmm. play with cats, coaching call if helpful.
Perfect. Sounds great. Okay. Same time next week?
I'll see you then.
I'll see you then. Okay.
Thank you. What I'm going to suggest we do, actually, Andrea, hang out a sec if you would.
Yeah.
What I'm going to suggest is that we have Alan and Anthony sit at the table. I'm actually going to invite the panelists for the clinical session as well to come on and sit at the table. The panel discussion that we planned to go into was focusing on clinical practice. I'm going to suggest that Alan and Anthony begin the discussion by discussing what just occurred in their sessions. But I'd like for the other panelists to come sit at the table and also, after Alan and Anthony have had a chance to talk about the experience, for them to join into the conversation and to give you a sense of... To give you a sense... of what we've been doing in the conference. Yesterday, we had a series of sessions where we had role plays somewhat like what you just observed. We had role plays somewhat like you just observed. Following each role play, we had our experts take time to figure out, sort out, what did they do in their different treatments that was common, that was essentially the same, it doesn't matter what you call it, even if for different reasons, they would go ahead and do the same sorts of things, say the same sort of things, and we would say that was common to MBT and DBT. What was compatible, things that might occur in one treatment, on purpose, specifically necessary to that treatment, that could fit in the other treatment, but isn't necessary, and we call that compatible. You could a DBT therapist has to do it, an MBT says, sure, I could do it. That would be compatible.
And then what's distinct? What it only fits into one treatment and really can't be put into the other treatment? So that was a big focus. So I'm going to ask for first for Alan and Anthony just to talk about the role play that they did. Okay. And okay. I'm going to ask for them. I'm sorry. Actually, I think we may have more panelists up here. No. I was going to ask for the first panel. There's four of you.
The first four upper right. These usurpers have decided to come.
I'm sorry. We have people who are very anxious to participate in the conversation, which is wonderful. I'll introduce our other panelists after Anthony and Alan, Dr. Sforzetti and Bateman have a chance to talk about their session. But then I want to open up into the discussion where we can hear the whole group kind of reflect on what implications are there for clinical practice that we can draw from what we've observed in these two treatments side by side. What can we learn from this? But first I'm going to ask perhaps for Anthony to begin by discussing a bit, is that fine? Let's start with Anthony to comment a bit on that experience. I've asked Andrea to stay up here as I'm expecting that there might be some, there might be times where people would be interested in hearing her perspective of this. Let's start there. Anthony, please.
Well, for me, I mean, I started in a way that we knew it's very common to focus a session initially if there's something important from the previous session. And from this, I was assuming it was session three. So one of the issues is, seriously, if you've been fired by three or four therapists before, it's going to be a very important issue at the beginning of any therapy. So I brought that in immediately because I had spoken with my patient before about getting her to attend to any mental states that she might experience, any sense of her own experience that I might be about to fire her or when she feels that I might. So I just wanted to focus that straight away. So I brought that in, and she said immediately now. She made it very current, which is fine. Actually, some patients would say, oh, no, not at the moment. You know, they're very nice to you for a time. And then you might bring them back to that somewhere in the session, because for us that would be one of those underlying unspoken sort of affect interactional processes where the therapist is concerned a bit about it because it's going to be an issue within the therapy but is unspoken. So I just wanted to make it explicit. So I was quite explicit at the beginning about that. I think then we went into, it's difficult to remember what I did, because I was so anxious anyway, and sort of, but you know, I was trying to follow a particular pattern of trying to understand actually what your experience was, and I tried to actually, putting it in your terminology, validate that, to try and say that, look, actually now you began to explain things. I said, now I can see actually how you felt like you did, because at first I couldn't quite work it out, but then I did. So that gave me a bit more information. And I knew you'd said you were suicidal, and that was the problem with telling me about that, because if you tell me, I'm going to fire you, and so on. So I think I tried to, as it were, get you around to the sense of make it safer, okay, that what was difficult about it, I said. I didn't try and extract it from the patient in a way. I just tried to say, well, what's so difficult in it, so that we could link that back. And then you talked about it, and I wanted to take you through that. And like many patients, you rush through these things, and it's okay to, because I had a short time, I probably in a normal session would have let you rush through it and just listen to it.
Well, and we also in our role play from yesterday identified in the session, you actually said, you said, what helps? And in my role, my character said, I don't know, and you brought it back on to me identifying what you do
what
know,
might,
you identified
no,
that, and we identified slowing down.
Slowing down a bit was a significant thing, so I didn't have to let you rush through things. But you can let patients tell the story, obviously, you know, if they want to. And they tend to tell it very quickly anyway, so you don't need to worry. They say, you know, so then this happened, and that happened, and that happened, and then I did this, you know. And it's quite quick, so that's fine. But I wanted to just keep you slowed down. I tried to do some other things more or less successful. I tried to make it reasonably current. I tried to put myself into the relationship so that there was something coming from me quite a lot. And I tried also one or two points to identify your whole psychic equivalence process later on about the hug equals he loves me in forever sort of thing. If he hugs me, it means that, and if he doesn't hug me, it means he never wants to see me again. I tried to get you to think a little bit about him and some of what his processes might be. You weren't terribly good at that, I should say, but you weren't, you know, they keep flipping back. But I kept on occasionally trying to push you back to it and so on. I tried to put in a little bit of challenge just to demonstrate sort of gentle ones. I don't think they were too awful, but I said, are you saying I'm a cat or something? I said something like that, and that stopped you for a minute, for your little sort of, are you saying I'm a cat or what? You know, it kind of turned you slightly, which is the point of a little challenge. In a way, I did one or two other things, I can't remember. Your flatmate and someone else sees you as someone who needs so much or something, and I said, are they right here? You know, and that kind of, I hoped, made you think, oh, maybe they are a bit, you know, sort of thing. Yeah, I am like that. You know, you began to have to consider some of this, and that was my primary aim. You were very worried about how you were going to be left, and I knew we had 10 minutes left, and it's very common for us to sort of work out where you are in your suicidality. You know, I didn't actually think you were that bad in that. I thought you were okay. You said you weren't feeling like self-harming. I tried to make it sort of current in the session and get you to see what was going on at the moment that, you know, may not have been going on there, which you managed to do a little bit. So I'm not sure I illustrated it very well, but trying to use the patient-therapist sort of moment and currency within the interaction to see how that informs what might have been the problem between you and John, you know, just trying to, or how you managed it or didn't manage it and what the differences were. So you can clarify some of that I tried to do. And I did try, one little bit, I can't remember what I did, but to put in my sort of perspective of it. But, you know, I can't remember what else. That help anyway?
Thank you, Dr. Bateman.
Oh, sorry. And the final thing, I tried to leave things so that we kind of rounded them off, so you had some sense of where you were and what you were doing in relation to this particular problem. That was all, because the problem was with John and your sense that actually, how are you going to manage the week? I think you asked me.
Right, and we talked about pressing pause.
Yeah,
which we practiced in our relationship in the session, and alluded to my doing that outside of the session with others.
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Alan just in a moment to comment on his session, and I want to offer to our audience, feel free to write questions which will be brought up to me, and I'll pose to them. The theme we're going to go into after we hear from Alan is really in terms of clinical practice. Now that we've seen these two treatments side by side, is there anything we can do with that information? Where does that go in terms of practice? Our next session after our break is going to focus specifically kind of in future directions, which might be more in terms of treatment development or research or anything like that. But as practitioners, now that we've seen what's kind of under the hood, what do you make of putting these two things side by side? So please feel free to send your questions up, and I'll get to as many of them as we can. Before we go there, though, let's hear from Alan and his session.
Okay. So I think that we started out in a pretty typical way, had a diary card, but Alice came in with so much affect that I felt like, and having rated her suicidal urges right now being pretty high, I wasn't sure whether to get on that right away as a kind of treatment interfering behavior and a suicide risk. So we spent the first couple of minutes orienting that, and I kind of finally made it clear that she was not imminently suicidal, so we could go back to setting an agenda. But of course, there was treatment interfering behavior, DBT language, which was her being really stuck that I was going to fire her, when in fact I had, from my, you know, hadn't done anything, I don't think, to indicate that. So what's important there from a DBT perspective, I think, is knowing that this is a problem for her. This clearly this is a problem of mentalization from your language, or a lack of relationship mindfulness from mine. It's clearly interfering with treatment. And so it's a very high target. So rather than reassure her which I didn't do, at least I hope I didn't do, very much in the beginning. I don't think I was terribly warm or reassuring. I really tried to get her to remember that we'd already talked about this, to remember, to actually look at me, to be in the present moment, and actually get to her, what we call in DBT, wise mind. In other words, to get regulated, this iterative process of getting regulated by being mindful and help and using regulation to be more mindful. Mindfulness helps get regulated, and working on regulation helps mindfulness. And then she was able to do that. And then she asked me, after she did that, then she asked me if I'd write it down. And at that point, I was very happy to reassure her because she'd already done a lot of work. And then I think my intention was then to be warmer and pretty responsive and do what she wanted me to sign it. I'll sign it. Fine. That's all good. And then it seemed like we could let that go and then come back to what would have been the start of a session if she hadn't come in dysregulated. And then we were able to look at the week and see that she had harmed herself and do a chain analysis. I'm sorry. Do you want to say something else?
Before that, yeah. you were really focused on getting me to look at you, and yeah. I was avoiding that, and you linked it to shame.
Oh, right.
Was
right.
that intentionally?
Oh, yeah.
I'm wondering, would you think of that as like emotional exposure for
yes.
me? Okay.
Yes, exactly. We would call that exposure. If the therapist is pushing it, we call it opposite action. If the client is doing it intentionally.
Hiding.
Right, she's hiding. The idea is that I hypothesized that she was feeling ashamed about this. And, of course, when you hide and you feel ashamed, it exacerbates the shame. If you go public, if you kind of expose yourself, I'm in the positive sense of that, like looking at me, okay, exposing her emotion and herself, then the idea is that shame ought to go down. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know if you did that intentionally or if that happened spontaneously. But
well, I think the belief was, I feel shame, showing you myself will increase the shame.
Right.
And doing it was a behavioral intervention.
Exactly the opposite.
Got it. Yep.
Right. And I especially am thinking, I want to get you out of your head and into the present moment. Because the things that were firing your emotion were not in the room. They were in your head. You're bringing them with you and chewing on them inside in a pretty dysfunctional way. That's how it seemed. And so rather than trying, in DBT, rather than trying to get her to change that process in her head, it's actually just to let it go and attend to, come back to a present moment situation when the present moment is safe and there's something, you know, potentially useful happening, to pay attention to that. That's like new input to her brain to help regulate it. And then we went and did a chain. I didn't write it down. I ordinarily, just so you know, I would write that down either on a piece of paper or on a whiteboard or something, but I didn't want to slow us down because I know we had a limited period of time. But I would have ordinarily written that down so she could see the steps that were going on here. And then we went and did a little solution analysis and played with that, and then did a little bit of getting a clear commitment to the solution. Like she's going to practice this little bit of identifying judgments and letting go of the judgments, which she was willing to do. And then took a look at overall how that affected her by the end of the mini session. So that, you know, was really actually a pretty typical session in many, many ways. Short, but a lot. I mean, it wouldn't necessarily go that fast in real life. But what we accomplished, I think we would ordinarily accomplish in an hour, I think. So that's my thoughts.
Well, and I think what's notable is that the chain analysis, the behavioral analysis, was on the high suicide urges as a behavior. Even though that wasn't an action, I didn't act on it. Having
right.
those urges is what you targeted.
Right.
To identify what led to that, and then a skillful solution.
Exactly, because they were so dramatically higher. The suicide risk was higher.
Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. What I'd like to do, I have a number of questions that have come in, and I will see about getting to them. I'd like to start by offering, by introducing our panelists, at least briefly. There's more full descriptions in the course book describing their accomplishments, which are very significant. I do want to acknowledge that we have Shauna going from left to right. We have Shauna Dowden representing mentalization-based therapy. We have Liz Simpson representing dialectical behavior therapy. We have Daniel Cupper, mentalization. And we have Adam Payne is sitting in, was gracious enough to sit in for us in place of Christine Furch, who was with us yesterday. Adam was also here yesterday. He's sitting in representing dialectical behavior therapy. And this panel, again, is kind of focused on clinically, you know, what to make of these side-by-side comparisons. And before I start tossing out questions, I have quite a few that have come in from the audience. I'm wondering if there's anything from these sessions that just occurred now or from yesterday that any of you wish to comment on in terms of what you would want a clinician to kind of walk away understanding, or what were the conclusions, or what do you make of these kind of side-by-side comparisons? Please.
I'm not sure this really is this on?
Yep.
I'm not sure this is really an answer to your question, but I just want to I just got emotional. I just wanted to take a minute to say what an incredible privilege and pleasure it is to watch two such incredibly accomplished clinicians show themselves in this public forum. I write down things they say. I know I'm going to take them right back to my patients. I just want to thank you both for taking your time to come out here and give us the benefit of your experience.
And along with that, although I think we've already had some acknowledgement, I just want to acknowledge, I briefly said something about Andrea kind of working from a composite of various patients she's worked with, I know that we have a variety of individuals in our audience, including people who struggle with borderline personality disorder, and I'd like to say that at least in my experience as a clinician, there was just such empathy involved with Andrea and such a willingness to put herself out there in that patient role, and it really made me very proud of our field that a clinician could get into someone's experience like that. So I really appreciate Andrea's work. So again, in terms of if maybe I make the question just slightly more focused, and if we start our general theme of yesterday, this idea of in what ways are these two therapies comparable? They're the same. In what ways are they compatible? You can draw things from one to the other without leaving adherence, without drifting from your model. And in what way are they distinct? What if we start with those for just a little bit? Before I start going to some of the questions, because that's something we've put a lot of thought into over these 2 days. And I'm wondering if anyone would be willing to share any preliminary conclusions of our panelists from yesterday's discussions, today's presentations. Please.
I'm going to start with one of the most basic things that I walk away from in terms of watching both of the interactions this afternoon is the level of warmth, the level of willingness to stay put with what they're doing. And so I think, Dr. Frazetta, you talked about at some point being less warm, but in general, your warmth was just so present. So when I think about what do we take home in terms of training other therapists, there's lots of different details about both therapies that we can get lost in, but there's just something about the willingness to stay put in whatever your theory is and to keep at it, in a way in which you were both very even. And you were so not even,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You were up and down, and there was just so much affect. And I think what allows one to stay even in the midst of all of that is because you've got some grounding in a theory. So both of the theories are different. What you're working from is different, but somehow it allows you to stay present. So that's one piece. I can keep going, but other people may have things to say.
Over these past, over the 2 days, I've been struck by the degree to which when I sit and watch how similar things feel to me, with a bit of a departure in how the diary card and the bits which are clearly more structured in DBT. However, once you get to the chain analysis, the assessment that you are going through step by step, how... And I think the collaborative stance, the openness to just not putting anything but, you know, gaining information, that there's such a similarity in the way that it looks to me. And then you both start to talk about it, and it sounds so different to me. I still think that there's a very strong similarity in the way that BPD and the therapies are conceptualized. When I hear you talk this morning, Anthony, and pardon me for being inarticulate about MBT because I'm just learning it, but if I understand it to be the part of the problem is when a client gets fixed on one side, on internal focus or external focus, and that what you're looking to do is increase their ability to be flexible, increase their ability to shift around. I mean, that just sounds so much like what we're hoping for clients in DBT to be able to be more dialectical in their thinking. And not only is it to keep the treatment moving forward, which I think is both true in both cases, also that is what we want the capacities of our clients to be able to improve, is their ability to similarly shift their focus, think dialectically. And then, so I'm with you, and then I start to hear you talk, and I'm like, oh my goodness. And when Anthony talks, I get an immediate shame response and makes me have an urge to go back to school and learn more things.
Good.
I was going to say we have a treatment for that.
That's normal. Don't worry.
Well, it is. Well, the thing is, I think it's my radical behaviorist roots that make me immediately focus on the emotion side of things. And, you know, I'm sitting here thinking... So much of, therefore, where I channel my thought is, you know, when I'm hearing Marie Paul earlier this morning talk, I think it's very much a healthy thing for me to be able to sit there and have tears well up in my eyes hearing her talk and to experience that sadness and that's healthy for me to be able to approach. And I really have the belief that all people grow and function better by virtue of their ability to experience emotions fully. And so... I see that as a main aim here, and I guess part of my question is that I don't know if that's what you're looking for in just that you would conceive of it as exposure in the session, so to speak, asking a person to hold it and tolerate it in the moment, and so therefore there's a similar mechanism of change, but I've just translated it to my language, or if there is actually a different process. And I think sometimes there is a different process, but that's where I think when Kira was talking, I thought it was so fascinating to hear her say that she gets these blog things that she has to read, and within the one thing that she was saying, she said, I'm able to mentalize so that I can understand the mental state of the blogger. And in the same thing she said, I'm learning to have the ability to tolerate the emotions long enough to, I don't think she said it, but find wise mind. And so I'm not really sure. That's part of my question is whether you conceive of it, whether it fits with the idea of exposure in the session or if it is actually something separate.
Shall I answer that? I mean, it's obviously translational language. But what Kira was talking about, we would... I suppose, probably call mentalized affectivity. So you remain within the emotional state whilst representing and holding that meaning of it and so on. So the mentalizing continues whilst you have the feeling. You call it wise mind. I didn't have a problem with the terminology. So your terminology you translate about exposure, I mean, the answer to that would be yes. But what are you exposing and what are you doing with it, I think, then becomes an issue. And what we would suggest is that what you're trying to do all the time, and I think we might, as it were, rely on it a little more than you probably, in a way, would be my guess. We rely on we're generating a process. And I think that's what you see as the overlap, if you see what I mean, that you see me trying to do something with the patient that generates some sort of process in the therapeutic dialogue and in their world and the problem that they're bringing. You generate a process too. I think you rely a little bit more than we, well, definitely more than we would on giving and delivering a skill of some sort, which we don't. You know, I don't want to rubbish them, but, you know, because I'm sure they're very important. But we don't have that reliance. We rely a bit more on the patient's mental abilities to keep them maintained. But you're generating the same process. And I was thinking when you were talking about the exposure of your shame, I mean, you know, because we think about it differently, come from a slightly different perspective, I suspect it ends up in the same place, though. We might end up saying, can you look at me here? You know, pull you to look at me. But you're more likely to start with saying, hang on, what's going on? Do you see, get her to describe her shame rather than give it to her. Mm-hmm. That would be the first thing. You'd step further back in a way, rather than assume something. Because as I said this morning, try not to assume. I tried not to too much to get you to... You weren't great at it, but some patients are quite good at it. They don't know, they say, you know. And then you say, well, give us a go. Give it, you know, what does it look like? You know, something to get them to just kind of represent that internal state. And then, actually, we'd be then concerned, and this is where you'd say the exposure's beginning to work, we're concerned that her state and what she's doing affects my state. I mean, it actually gets pretty difficult for a therapist when the patient will never look at them. Or you've got an emu with a hair like this over her eyes the whole time, looking down saying, yeah, no. I had one last week, you know, a flat cap patient with, you know, one of these big things, and she just grunted occasionally, you know. And, you know, I can have all sorts of reasons, but it's a big problem for me. You know, I've got an hour and a half to work this, and I've got someone who just sits and grunts occasionally. You know, this is difficult. So it affects my mental state. So then we present our mental state in relation to that, and that, see if that's... It's really difficult for me. I can't pick up cues if you don't look at me. You know, I said, I'm going to end up like this, you know, sort of thing. So it pulls it around, really. But I think that's because we're coming from a slightly different angle, and you would call that exposure. But I'm worried about the mental state effect on the mental... my ability to function, so I'd pull it a different way. And then I'd have a different thinking about, you know, I'm quite intrigued, and this is where the, as it were, theoretical stance would mean a technical difference, perhaps, but again, I think it would generate the same process, which is, you know, I didn't see your sense of being fired as a sort of therapy interference in the way perhaps you might think of it. I was more concerned that it was actually a real affect sort of anxiety in the relationship, that my hunch was there with the boyfriend, that he might fire her at any moment and she'll never know. So I've got two things here. So I'm going to want to draw those out into our relationship, really, and then see how that links to the boyfriend. You see what I mean? So it becomes incredibly focused, interpersonal. Mm-hmm. So you're heightening the affect states in vivo, which is your exposure, and getting her to keep it going. So it ends up in the same place. It just comes through a different angle.
You mentioned not teaching skills in MBT.
Well,
or how did you say it? Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's
fine. Or that came up yesterday, this difference of teaching skills versus doing relational work. And not focus. During our role play, the pressing pause, to me, felt like a skill. I mean, I guess we didn't go through specific modules and worksheets on how to do it, but it felt very much like skill-like and consistent with DBT.
It's an attempt to get you to generate your sort of sense of what it is rather than to apply it, and that would be quite an important focus for us.
There was a question from the audience that relates.
Can I just have just 20 seconds? Because I think that this is very important. As an early session, I did suggest that she was feeling shame. Having done that once, next time I would absolutely ask her what she's feeling. Because on this continuum of skills and empowerment, and, you know, a skill in DBT is just the ability to do something that's needed in the moment. That it's a lack of skill if the person can't do what's needed in the moment, and it's a skill if you can. So, you know, that's, you know, it's just an arbitrary word. So right then, I didn't perceive that you had were very facile with identifying that emotion, and maybe felt a little sense of urgency because of the role play. But next time, it's going to be like, what are you feeling? Remember last time? And I'm going to drag it out of you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So over time, the sessions are going to look different.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, you look like you have a comment. Did you want to?
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. Because I had the same feeling, actually more than just one time.
Can people hear? Is that getting picked
up? Can you hear? More than one time that you, and I think it was as you were possibly speeding up at the end, that I think from an MBT perspective, we would have taken a lot more time sort of fleshing out her experience, say, with a boyfriend, even though she described it specifically as a black hole and things like that. I think we would want to know what that's about. Of course, Our hypothesis is probably something having to do with this very, very hyperactive attachment system.
Right. And this is a really good point you're making, because I wouldn't have drawn that out. We were on a chain of suicide, high suicide urges. This is, believe me, the point, your point you're making is not lost on me. It's not that I think it's not. I think actually it's very important for us to get to, but not in this session. I'm much more interested in making sure she's safe this week and being able to put that on the side burner, but a pretty close side burner. As, I mean, we already have lots of evidence that she's got trouble. By the way, just a dialectical point, because I think this is important. How many people think that she's got too much need for affiliation and relational stuff, with too many relational needs? She's too needy. How many people think that? Honestly. Okay. Because I think a lot of people have told this character that. And in DBT, we wouldn't say that. And I'm interested to hear in DBT, if you, we would simply say she doesn't have corresponding balance of independent skills. That her needs and desires for closeness are perfectly fine. Everybody gets to want as much closeness as they want. It's just that she, her inability to tolerate it when she can't is what's missing. Because not everybody can have it all the time. Even a person, even if she matched John, John sounds like a lousy match, by the way. But but
maybe not. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
No.
He's giving her another chance.
Okay, yeah. I'm actually going to ask our panelists, partially for the sake of our,
I'd say he's
of
a
our
lousy
interpreters.
Guy. I'd say he's a lousy match.
One moment. Our interpreters are working very hard to translate each person, so we can't have people talking at the same time. Thank you.
Sorry.
So, I actually don't mean that judgmentally about John. I mean literally in the transaction, his desires for affiliation are so much lower than Alice's. It's a setup for a lot of misery for one or both of them. Having said that, even if John had the same desires for affiliation, at moments, each of them, you know, somebody's going to want to go pee, you know, and she's got to be able to tolerate that and actually enjoy being alone for a few seconds. And so it's not that she wants too much closeness in DBT, it's that she doesn't have the corresponding balanced skill of enjoying her independence.
There's two points I'd like to see if we can clarify from the comments that just happened. One of them sounded like a kind of a distinction between the treatments about where, if I heard this right, that in DBT, while that is clinically useful information to find out kind of what's the relationship issue there, in this context of self-harm or suicide urge, it would be non-DBT to go there. And it sounds like, but MBT would say that's the important place to go. That would be a distinction in terms of what would occur in the room. That was one point. And then the other point, I'm wondering if the MBT people could respond to what Alan just said, this idea of this kind of nothing wrong with her affiliative need. The problem is simply that she doesn't have the ability to balance it with independence. Would you approach it in that way? Does that fit into what would occur in the room in the conversation? Anyone from the MBT side, if you would.
Well, I think there's a lot of routes to reducing suicidality. So the idea you have to just go down one road, I think, is erroneous. And whether or not you shouldn't look at the interpersonal or should do this sort of sense, it doesn't make sense to me that the exploration of the interpersonal may well turn on her capacities to reflect and consider. And that's why you will all, and that may be just as good as anything else in terms of reducing suicidality, in my view. And it certainly seems to reduce suicidality, as far as we can tell.
There's research showing that it does. Yeah. So one thing I want to make clear for you, for exactly. The panel and the audience, so, the intention is not in any way to assume, let's figure out what the right answer is. We have two empirically supported treatments that both reduce suicidality. The point I was trying to make, and I was hoping that the panel, I would like the panel thinking about, and something else I didn't mention earlier, but our panelists, our experts, have also agreed to work on chapters to sort this stuff out. It isn't to say that one is right over the other, but just to figure out where the lines are between what makes these treatments different. And it seemed to me that we were hitting a point where that this is a place where they diverge, that the DBT would say you have to go this way. Don't talk about the relationship at that moment.
Can I disagree
and
with
the MBT
your
would.
Characterization?
Please, go ahead. Sure.
Because what I should – let me just preface this by saying I'm DBT trained and I've been doing DBT since 1995. And I've been going to mentalization trainings, and I've been running a mentalization group in my program since 2006, I think it was. So I'm straddling both worlds. But whereas we were talking earlier today, I think, or maybe yesterday, about the sort of stance of not knowing in MBT, I think the stance in DBT is it depends.
And I wouldn't say that I would not focus on the relationship when I was doing a functional analysis of her suicidal behavior. It depends. It depends on where she is on the chain. If she's in my office about to jump off a cliff, I may be a lot more focused at what's going on right this second. But if she's relatively not suicidal right this second, and we're doing the functional analysis, and it's clear that that was the precipitant to her suicidal behavior, which I agree with you it was, that contretemps between her and her boyfriend, I might spend an enormous amount of time on there. So I think one of the things that really, in my mind, characterizes DBT is the range of skills, strategies, whatever you want to call them, that we might bring to bear, and the flexibility of their application.
That actually strikes me as similar to what Alan was saying. Alan, is that consistent with your message? So really that context difference, that in this particular case, DBT would have a direction that's different than what MBT might do. But in a different situation, DBT might have a very similar conversation.
And I suspect MBT has a similar flexibility based on what is showing up in front of you.
DBT is conceptualizing that in that moment you're working on life-threatening behavior. You may be talking about the relationship, but in your mind you're saying, I'm working on life-threatening behavior right now.
Which gets at some part, another major theme is so often you might have the same intervention, but for very different reasons or a different conceptual model. One question, there were a few questions.
Can we just answer
please,
that?
Go ahead.
Because you keep bringing these things up and then talking them off. It's quite important here that whether or not you will at any given moment, the two therapies are quite clear. This is going to, if a patient is about to jump off a cliff, you're not going to say, well, how's your mum? You're going to focus on actually what is the dangerous situation, which is why with you, I thought it was very important in the last, when I knew I was ending, to start rounding it back to where the problem was, which was how suicidal was she, because she's going to finish, we have to have some sense of closure and stability in it, and that's very important. But going off in terms of working out the interpersonal is key. But, the second thing you brought up, which you may have forgotten, but was very important, which is actually this dialectic about whether or not in MBT we would consider, is she too needy, or is it actually the lack of independence?
Thank
you. Now, I actually tried to address that. I tried to say, well, hang on, what's he up to here? And you did actually say, well, he wants to have a life, but he also wants on of his own, and he wants to have a life with me. And I brought it back to her, and I said, well, what about you? Where are you in this? To try to get her. So I don't know whether she's got too much neediness, because I'm not knowing, or she's got too little independence. But sure as hell, we're going to have a look at this. So do you want a life of your own? So what's that like? Do you want a life just with her? Do you see what I mean? She's going to have to work that out, which is why I was trying to get you to start beginning to contrast them, which is to try to start from basics, really, I thought.
Thank you. There were some several comments that came in describing the kind of interaction that occurred in the DBT role play versus the MBT role play, and there were some questions relating to things about focus on the alliance, about kind of a natural interaction, and there was one that specifically, I think, raised a very important point. How much of what we saw in differences there in terms of the alliance interaction was the individual therapist versus the therapy orientation. And I'm wondering whether our panel of experts, other than Alan and Anthony, would comment on, to the extent that there were any, were there the looking at alliance or kind of the flow of interaction, are there things that you think are different, and I'm going to say both from today but also from the role plays yesterday, between these? Does it seem that one of them has more attention to alliance than the other in practice, or were there things, if there were differences here, do you think that was a function of the therapies versus the therapists? anyone that can comment on alliance, those sorts of issues. And some of the word directs to Andrea, actually. So if you'd like to start it, by
Absolutely.
All means.
So from my perspective as being the patient in the role play today and in our session yesterday, which is also focused on suicide and self-destructive behaviors, where Dr. Simpson was doing the DBT role play, I felt the therapy alliance to be very, very, very similar between DBT and MBT, even with the two different DBT clinicians yesterday and today. Absolutely. I felt a similar level similar level of connection and premium placed on that connection between me and my role and that person in his or her role.
I think when I'm doing the two different therapies, as much as I live in fear that Anthony will ever show up at my treatment program and see what I'm actually up to, but my experience, I don't worry about Alan showing up. I think I'm more controlling as a DBT therapist. I'm more, I sort of think of myself as pruning and nipping things in the bud a bit more, and whereas when I'm running my mentalization group, I'm much less controlling and much more, although still trying to get something to happen, a particular thing to happen, but it's not so stop that, do this, you know, whereas in DBT I'm doing a lot of blocking and moving the person and shifting things quite consciously and intentionally. I just feel a lot more controlling in that style of relating. So I think that might be a difference, even though I think quite attentive to the alliance, but some of the way the alliance is built perhaps is in my being so, I don't know, confident or something different there.
And yeah. To be dialectical with my friend Liz, DBT asks us to be dialectical, and therefore there are times where, as a DBT therapist, it is not as effective for me to be doing the pruning, and I have to sit back. And I'm looking to draw behavior out and go from skill acquisition to skill strengthening or even generalization. And so that's why I think the answer to your question is I think that there's not the difference in the therapies. I think you do see some style of the therapist probably here. Because I think DBT, well, I don't know. DBT certainly welcomes the pruning, and yet sometimes it asks us to do the opposite and be able to sit back.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I think there's a real similarity in the, and whether you call it validation or empathy and sort of joining together with a patient's experience at some level. And I think the result in both therapies that creates a kind of ability to work together on mentalization or problems is a sense of safety. I mean, a reduction of danger, a reduction of vigilance, all of those things which I think allow the patient to mentalize or learn.
We have a few questions about aspects of one treatment and where they might fit into the other, things like that. One of them is there room for mentalization during a DBT session, especially given strong reactions that patient and therapist often have to each other, such as, could you say something like, how did you feel when you walked in and I said you look terrible, as an example of what they're perceiving as a mentalization-style question. Can the DBTers across this role play and also yesterday comment on this sort of idea?
I'm a MBT, but I was just going to comment on a moment in which, Alan, I thought you were doing mentalizing, which is at the very beginning when you said the thing about she was afraid that you were going to fire her, and you said, stop, look at my face. What did you see on my face? Which was very much, I thought, a mentalizing intervention.
It's also emotional exposure.
And emotional exposure. But before the just look, I mean, the emotional exposure I saw is what you're saying, look at my face, is sort of to connect. But before that, really early on in the session, you thought that I was going to fire you because of some way in which I reacted to the diary card. That's not what my experience of how I reacted was. Can we go back and relook at that? And then you coached her into doing it. I think maybe how the MBT therapist may have been a little bit different is not so much of the coaching. Mm-hmm. That there's a little bit of, right, so I also do both DBT, I've been trained in both DBT and MBT, and I also feel a little bit of that. I'm a little bit more controlled.
More direct.
I'm more, I have an outcome more in mind. Mm-hmm. With DBT, that I've got somewhere I'm headed. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I was first at the training for mentalization, one of the key pieces that I had trouble getting my mind around was that we're not actually necessarily going anywhere. we're staying put and trying to understand something about this moment without an outcome necessarily in mind, knowing that, of course, our outcome is that patients are getting better and feeling better about themselves.
And so, that said, there's aspects that you're perceiving in the role plays, such as this, where clearly there is mentalization occurring, even if the stylistic, if it's a little bit stylistically different. Would any of the DBTers, when the people focusing on the DBT, comment on your experience of incorporating mentalization, anything beyond that, within DBT? Whether there's room for it, whether there's...
It's already there.
Okay.
But it's, and Marcia is often, I mean, I've been watching, she's quite explicitly doing mentalizing, except she doesn't say that's what she's doing. I'm sure if she looked at it, she'd say, well, that's it. And you'd say, that's it. But I think there's a difference. And Alan, you've really elaborated the components of DBT when you work on validation that are about mentalizing. But I don't think it's something we consciously and intentionally set out to do.
The target is mindfulness within the DBT model. It's about being present with what's actually here. And what's actually in your mind about me, you have to actually pay attention to me to get close to that.
Yeah, we do that a lot.
Yeah, we do that a lot, absolutely. And we don't think about it as mind. We think of it as relationship mindfulness, not as mentalizing. And I'm not sure, I suspect that means it is a little different in some ways, you know. But there's a phenomenon that's certainly the same.
Yeah, I think it's a phenomenon that's very similar, you know, whatever the nuances. And I mean, we just slightly captured it, obviously, in different language, but that beginning that you were mentioning, I mean, I would just see it was a mentalizing, if we were trying to just code or something, say, well, actually, you're saying, no, hang on a minute, you've got an external focus here of mentalizing, but it doesn't equate to the internal focus. My internal focus is not to fire you, but you're doing something here which you're bringing in or seeing on my face or doing something. So it's an external and internal focus of mentalizing, and that's what you then try to work with. That's it. And then you just say, well, how do you get to that? And, I mean, you actually then coach her, really, whereas I think we'd say, well, you know,
just let her find her way.
Pardon?
Let her find a way.
Oh, and you'd focus on it. So when Shona says you don't know where you're going, in fact, you do know where you're going in MBT. You say, well, hang on, we've got this piece of work now, which is external-internal link that doesn't seem to be working here at all. Mm-hmm. You know, it just seems to be haywire. And if that's going on outside, you're in real trouble with John because you walk in and say, you're going to leave me, aren't you? Mm-hmm. It's not going
to...
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, you know, so that's where you're going.
Mm-hmm. In the other direction, someone points out Alan's description of blocking the invalid, and how might a MBT therapist block invalid? And I think some of that might be already occurring in this conversation, but I'm wondering if anyone wants to add to that, doing this kind of invalidating the invalid from an MBT perspective.
I think one of the ways that we do it is when we genuinely express confusion around an idea that's not valid. Sort of like, well, how does that work? You know, and by continuing to follow up and question. So, yes, in yesterday's role play, it was around if you don't meet with me 5 times a week or you don't call me 3 times a day, you don't care about me, right? So how's that work? Something about just the genuine question of it, I think, starts to block validating the invalid or invalidating the valid or however that goes.
You have to practice.
It's been a long 2 days.
They've worked very, very hard here.
The quiz is in an hour.
There's another question somewhat similar, or at least looking at the DBT and asking about the mentalization, the idea of skills deficits versus lack of motivation. They're actually referring to Alan's swimming pool analogy that came up in the presentation, and to what extent how this would be viewed in MBT, this kind of skills deficit is the reason that you're not doing it versus motivation. You're choosing or not wanting to do it. Does that fit into MBT, that sort of that distinction, that perspective of skills deficit being the reason that someone doesn't?
It depends what analogy. I mean, if you use an analogy like that, then...
It's broad, okay.
If you just say, well, they could ride a bike, you know, they know how to ride a bike, but then you give them back, say, They've actually got the skill, they can't do it. You know, the analogy shifts. But the question's very important, is that, is it something that they simply haven't got?
Right.
Or not? And I think the line in MBT, certainly the theoretical line, just take that initially, is that it's neither. I'm allowed a dialect. That's good, isn't it? It's both, but neither. Basically, we don't see it as a specifically deficit problem, and we don't see it as something that you're just not using and should use, and you know, so it's kind of both, really. So that's one thing. But in the treatment, I don't know how to swim. Basically, I don't know how you should swim here. I don't know whether you should call up and order, you know, an engineer to build a bridge, or you should take your clothes off and join them up and throw them to someone and they'll pull you in. I have no idea how you're going to get to that bank. I don't know that it's your swim, if you see what I mean. So it's a much more a not-knowing stance. Actually, this is a big problem here. I'd say this is life-threatening, actually. This is dangerous. How the hell are we going to get out of it?
Would you say that it sounds like the premise, though, is that the person doesn't know how they would face
They've
the
no
challenge?
They have no idea how to do it.
That
no,
sounds
not
very
making
compatible,
it up. Absolutely.
Comparable. Yeah. Of the two, both looking at a skills deficit, but whereas DBT teaches, MBT explores to help them discover,
I would certainly say there's teaching and learning, but one is an explicit, much more explicit, the other is more implicit. But there's certainly, that's a teaching style, it's just more Socratic.
So more of a Socratic style
but
of teaching.
But it's certainly teaching.
That's true.
I wouldn't say that there isn't teaching of skill when you say, absolutely. Gee, I wonder if you... You're actually creating an image of taking your clothes off, and
I wouldn't say that to the patient. Definitely not. You're probably in psychic.
Please talk into the mic.
Exactly.
You know the point.
Absolutely.
All right. Now this
you're
was
going to let her drown.
This was a question that came to MBT, but it strikes me it could have been as much to DBT. So if anyone wishes to comment, if there are multiple, maybe endless event triggers for the emotional sense of rejection, how does it make sense to focus on one incident as opposed to the emotional dysregulation in general? So this idea of focusing on specific incidents for something that may have many different situations that occur, this seems to occur in both treatments, and I'm wondering if anyone would comment on that, on approaching it that way. Perhaps it was spoke to mentalization. So for a mentalization, if you would say, if there's endless event triggers for an emotional surge of rejection, how does it make sense to focus on one time that it occurred? Would an MBT person comment on that?
Right. So the idea, I think, is that, of course, there's endless triggers, and what gets in the way of managing those triggers effectively, to use DBT language, is a failure in mentalization, and that what we're trying to do is stimulate robust mentalization, and that by focusing on one event in which you lose the ability to mentalize and scooching them back into mentalizing once they've lost it, you're developing a more robust capacity to mentalize across situations, so that when they meet up against another trigger or another trigger or another trigger, they're more likely to stay in a mentalizing mode, which then allows them to manage it better.
Offering a specific trigger, a behavioral sample, allows you to get affective arousal in the room with you, as opposed to talking about the times I've been rejected, which you can just avoid making any contact with anything of note.
And it seems this was, again, one of those common, very across the two treatments. This was really in common.
And you can end up with a lot of storytelling that doesn't map very well onto the phenomenon.
Yeah, the narrative spin.
I see Anthony doing that consistently. Coming back to the here and now means that the story is not what matters, even though you're actually a little bit about, you know, more about the way we think about that, but still it's about thinking about a specific phenomenon that's real, that you can actually observe and feel, as opposed to the storytelling kinds of things, which I think, my sense is a commonality, where actually neither of these is like in that.
Which I think helps both the therapist to understand and also helps the client to be able to apply.
Mm-hmm. More precise. Yeah.
There's a question, it was directed to MBT, but I'll offer it to either. How do these treatments think about transference, or do they? And it was focused, if we have an MBT person speak first, the question is does MBT include transference? Is that something, the idea that there's a transference that occurs, does that fit into this model? However you wish to define that term.
Or however you wish to define it. Okay. All right, I won't go down the definition route. The answer fundamentally is yes. And we set out six steps in managing this sort of problem. So if you're seen in a certain way by the patient, you know, the person thinks you don't like them or something very basic, and actually that does or doesn't map on to something. That's the question here. Are they bringing something in some way and putting it on, which is actually a bit like you're coming in with a baggage here and then seeing something. That would be transference enough, in inverted commas, for us in MBT. And then we have six steps or seven steps, so that's how you count them. One is first to validate that experience, the sense of actually what it is. What I might contribute is the second step, how I've made you sense that I don't like you or whatever it is, so your component in it. So it's not just imagining. Imagination here. This is actually something that's created between the two of us, and we have to define that before you can move further. And having done that, you can then go to see whether there's some kind of relatively alternative component to it, that you're sensitive to this, but I'm actually doing that, and that's going to be a problem for us, and is that a problem outside, so you can generalize it. And you use that, what we call mentalizing the relationship in that way. What you don't do is interpret it in relation to the past and bringing it in. We tend not to do that, because that requires quite a high level of mentalizing capacities, which most of these patients don't have during treatments anyway.
Okay. And is there anything that on the Alan? It seems like you want to.
Yeah, I would say with respect to transference, absolutely not never, and absolutely all the time.
Could you clarify, please?
Yeah, sure. You know, if what you mean by transference is an unconscious process, never, because there is no unconscious process in DBT. It's not part of the model. But if what you mean is paying attention to the patient's reactions to what the therapist is doing and sorting out how much of it has to do with what I just did and how much you're bringing with you and how much, you know, all the time. Yeah.
There's a question that can go to the – we have two individuals who are trained both in MBT and DBT. We have Shauna and Liz, who are representing, respectively, MBT and DBT. The question is do you use these treatments, these orientations, simultaneously, or do you kind of do one or the other in your practice?
With different patients.
Do you want me to go?
Well, different patients are in different situations, or do you think of yourself as integrating them kind of as you go? I think I'm translating the question slightly, but that's putting. Do you keep them separate in your work?
Yes. So, the way that I do it is that I have certain folks that I work exclusively as much as any one person can do one thing exclusively, knowing that they know something else, where I really identify it from the start as a DBT case. I present it on my DBT consultation team, and I try and think almost exclusively from that perspective. And then there are other folks that I do at the beginning decide, okay, this is going to be a mentalization case. How I do that, I have my own little algorithm. It's not, there's no research yet on this, right? So it's my algorithm, and what is my sample size? Pretty small, but so far it's working. But there are places in which there's a little bit of synthesis. Primarily what'll happen is if I'm working with someone from a DBT framework and we're running into some willfulness, that may be a place that I'd drop in and spend more time trying to understand from a mentalizing perspective what's going on in their mind state, and I might stay longer in that in a way that if I was getting coded from a DBT perspective, they might be saying, what are you doing? This is not DBT. I don't know if it is, in fact, not DBT, but it feels like I'm doing something I ought not to be doing.
You're getting at something which I'm hoping we can get to a little bit in the next session. One idea that's been floated a little bit, Alan and Anthony are both aware of this, is this idea of what would it look like if you did cross-code sessions? Would it work out or not? And I hope our next session is going to focus on kind of future directions. Where do you go from here? That may be one thing that we'll discuss. Liz, would you comment on your experience of having training in both and similarly?
Well, nobody's coding me, so Lord knows what I'm up to. And I also think that I was listening to Adam saying that his radical behavioral roots. You know, I'm a psychiatrist. I had very little training, frankly, in anything, but psychotherapy-wise. But I'm literally, we had six sessions on behavior therapy in my 4 years of residency training. And I think it's an extremely, I mean, it's an incredible body of knowledge. And that I've had, most of my exposure to it has been self-led. And so I feel that sometimes when I watch Alan operate, I realize how deep his comprehension of those concepts and his ability to deploy them is compared to my own. So I sometimes wonder when I start, I'm interested in psychotherapy in general, and I started searching around MBT because of the things that I thought it could do that I didn't know how to reliably make happen in my DBT therapy. And I don't know whether that reflects differences in the therapy, differences in my patient population, differences in me, and what I know and what I'm capable of learning. So I'm really quite up in the air about it. But I do know, I mean, like you say, you can't forget what you know, really and truly. And poor, my poor patients, like, I come home from conferences and I'm, you know, they're like, what did you learn now? Because I'm like, la, 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 you know. I've had some very interesting results. The kinds of feedback I get from my patients about how they experience me and they experience what we're doing. And I would say that my mentalization group is one of my most popular groups. People want to be in it, find it really interesting, find it really hard, but they stay. And I've got a DBT program that works very well, and we have good outcomes. So I am making some kind of, I mean, DBT is probably my default, but I just think there's something really valuable in this other model that I can't discard. So I'm not a loyalist, I guess. I'm a traitor, I think is the word for me. But no, I don't think anyone has the answer.
Somewhat related, and this came up a little bit in both your answers, and I think we'll end this session putting this to Alan and Anthony. There's some questions about this idea of whether there are patients that might fit more in one versus the other. This was articulated in those answers a little bit. And any thoughts you have about that, anything particular from things that have occurred within this conference? On anything, hypotheses or thoughts about patient matching, either of you?
My answer is really short. I have absolutely no idea.
Seriously, I just have no idea. Mine's equally short. We have no evidence, and I have no idea. I'm been around a long time. And it surprises me that some patients do fantastically well. They seem to, it just astonishes me. And it surprises me, and then someone who I thought may have done very well doesn't do so well, and all sorts of things. I have no idea who's suitable for what.
In the absence of data, starting from clinical impressions, would seem reasonable. I'm wondering, Shauna, would you be willing to say a word or two about your algorithm? And maybe we can start there with our next session. Do you have anything you can say about what leads you in one direction or the other when you make that choice?
Well, to set them up for the next panel, is sort of there are a whole host of patients that don't seem to get better as quickly as we'd like them to.
Mm-hmm.
My algorithm at this point is that when I've got someone younger who's very active in their self-harm, so that they're engaging in self-harm, multiple times a week, I tend to go towards DBT. And then that may be because that's the thing that's going to decrease my anxiety so that I can be calm in the room, because there's a worksheet that we can go to. And that if someone is coming in and they've got some impulsivity, but it really is that it's their relationships that are the place where most of their impulsivity occurs, then I might tend towards more of a mentalizing stance. And then occasionally I actually switch horses mid-race, which may be horrible. But it really always comes down to the fact that some people just don't seem to be getting better, mm-hmm. And who are those people that, that aren't getting better? And I guess what guides me is wanting to stay in it versus to say, well, this person is failing this treatment, mm-hmm. or this treatment is failing this person, to kind of stay in it until the research catches up with us. Because, when we're clinicians, we have to be in the room with the person and we have to do something.
To do something.
Excellent. Why don't we end there and pick up on those? Thank you to our panel focusing on clinical issues. I'll continue to make efforts to get to our questions. We're going to start up again in 15 minutes. We'll start at 10 of 4.
It sense to anybody.
Thank God that's over.
What?
I said, thank God that's over.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that, you know, that's shown is